The Air Force is the smallest and oldest it has ever been, too small, according to Air Force leaders. But a plan to add people looks to be more and more unlikely, given that Congress hasn't passed a budget yet for the fiscal year that begins October 1st. Air Force Secretary Deborah Lee James joins Emily Kopp at the Air Force Association's Air and Space Conference to talk about the Air Force's financial concerns and much more. Emily, good morning.
Good morning, and Secretary, it's great to have you with us. Just give us an idea of what you're doing right now with all of this uncertainty left in the last couple of weeks of September before the fiscal year ends.
Well, thanks so much for having us on, Emily. Really, really appreciate the opportunity to talk about these important issues. So we are right now within weeks of closing out fiscal year 15, and we are about to enter fiscal year 16 with a huge amount of uncertainty, which creates a lot of extra work and a lot of extra angst amongst our airmen. So specifically, we are hanging fire on the threat of sequestration, which is still the law of the land, and we desperately need to get that lifted for the whole of government. Number two, the Congress, as you pointed out, has not yet completed action on the FY16 appropriation or authorization bills. This is two critical pieces of legislation for us, and so the likelihood of having at least a short-term continuing resolution is very, very high. We certainly hope there will be no government shutdown. Now, a short-term continuing resolution is not good, but it is something that we have dealt with for the last 6 or 7 years. The very worrying concern is if we should get into a longer-term continuing resolution. We would not be able to build up our end strength modestly, as we very badly need to do. It would impact a variety of programs on the order of 50, we believe, in our Air Force. It would provide us even less money than sequestration would. It's a bad deal overall, and we just can't let it happen.
So what's the difference between short-term, which is bearable, and long-term, which isn't?
Well, a short-term, in my mind, would be a few months. A long-term would be much closer to a year. Closer to a year is simply untenable. And we have just got to, as a government, come together, put in place the compromises necessary so that the military and the rest of government can have reasonable predictability, know what the budget will be, and be able to execute our programs efficiently.
So, of course, you are lobbying Congress to get things done. On the other hand, you can't just wait and see what happens. What sort of contingency plans are you putting in place for CR and also for a shutdown, if that should happen?
Well, we, of course, have these contingency plans on the ready from previous years in terms of a shutdown. And again, we very, very much don't want to see that happen. When it comes to a short-term CR, or any CR for that matter, the basic rule is that you can only spend the amount of money that you were allowed to spend the previous year. And so we have all of these totals. And once again, I would reiterate that for a short-term situation, we've gotten rather used to coping with this, but a long-term situation is what would be much more devastating.
And you said that you want to add troops. We've been talking about how the Air Force is at the smallest level it's ever been. What does this budget uncertainty mean in terms of the plan for recruiting and retaining people?
So we would like to upsize our Air Force modestly, about 7,000 or so between the active duty and our very important partners in the National Guard and Reserve. But we cannot do that because that was higher than the level of FY15 if we have to live with a continuing resolution. The reason why we need these 7,000 or so is we need to plug some important holes and address some important issues that we have in our Air Force, such as concerning our nuclear enterprise, such as the cyber forces of our Air Force. We have maintenance issues where we need to beef up our maintenance teams because our aircraft are aging out quickly. So these are some of the key areas that we need to pump it up in terms of our manpower just slightly, and a CR would not allow for that.
I want to switch topics slightly, but still on the issue of manpower. Now, the Air Force has been the most aggressive of the services in shrinking its headquarters staff by 20%. Now the Pentagon is telling all the services, go further, 25% by 2019, I believe. Tell me a little bit about what you've done and what more you have to do.
Well, as you point out, Emily, former Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel did challenge all of the military services over about 5 years to reduce our headquarters spending by about 20%. We, the Air Force, chose to take it all in year one. We did take our 20% in funding reductions for our headquarters, and now Congress is asking us to lean farther in and cut even more. And by the way, we're interested in doing the very best we can, as I like to say, to make every dollar count. We're the leaders of the Air Force, we the headquarters, and so it's quite proper that we go first. So we're looking at how we can tighten our belts even more, and we're also waiting to see the final language from Congress so that we know what the objective ultimately will be.
What have you gained by being so aggressive? In other words, you made most of these cuts in 1 year. You didn't spread them out. What has the Air Force gained from that?
We were able to more quickly tell people who would be impacted what their future would likely be and offer them alternative options. And number two, we were able to free up the money more quickly from headquarters and redirect it to other important areas within our Air Force, like our training and our readiness and our modernization and our people. So that is why we chose to go aggressively. I'm a former business person, and this is exactly the way a business would approach. They would never spend on headquarters or overhead types of functions for a longer period of time if they could do the reductions in a shorter period of time, because there's other important investments that we need to put that money toward.
Do you believe that it helps you in situations like this when you don't know what your budget is going to look like? Do you think that you're in a better position now than you would have been if you had stretched those cuts out?
I think if we had stretched the cuts out, people would have had uncertainty for even longer than what they've already had uncertainty for, and that's hard on human beings. So that's one point. And we would not have had that money as early on freed up to reapply into other important investment areas. So on balance, I do think it was the right decision.
And can you squeeze more to get to 25%?
It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. I can tell you that folks in headquarters are working very, very hard. We are also looking constantly at what can we stop doing. In other words, are there procedures and processes that we can roll back so that we don't just keep asking fewer and fewer people to work harder and harder? So we're constantly scrubbing our own requirements at headquarters in that regard.
You've also, since taking office, taken on a diversity initiative. You've spoken about how you want women in particular to rise through the ranks and also more people of color. Since rolling out, I believe, 9 different steps earlier this year, what has the Air Force gained?
Well, first of all, readiness requires, in my opinion, our future readiness requires that we be a more diverse Air Force. Now, what do I mean by that? We need, in the future war for talent, you might say, to have the widest pool of young people available to us that we can then attract into our Air Force. And the United States is an increasingly diverse population. Diversity, by the way, to me means diversity of gender and ethnicity and race. It also means background and experience. So a lot of people think of the Air Force as pilots. And pilots, it's a very important career field for us. But we also have cyber professionals. And we have people who know all about logistics and the RPA, remotely piloted aircraft world. So we have a wide array of skills. And I like to see all of that form of diversity represented at decision-making tables throughout our Air Force, throughout the ranks. So it's a readiness imperative, and what these 9 or 10 initiatives that you referenced will do for us, in my opinion, and what I hope, is that they will help us advance the ball. It will help us get a wider pool of people into the different career fields, help them rise through the ranks, retain them through the years in our Air Force, and that will just make us better and better for the future.
Some of them you've already implemented. Are you seeing real results yet?
We are seeing results. So we, for example, challenged our recruiting and our officer commissioning sources to widen the pool of available women that we could choose from, young women to come into our Air Force. We set a goal of 30% applicant pool. Not sure we're going to make the absolute goal of 30%, but I am quite sure that we will have advanced the ball and done better than last year. So these are all stretch goals, you might say. One that I'm kind of proud of and excited about is a new program for mentoring. So I've heard a lot throughout our force, desire from men and women and people of all different backgrounds, they want more mentoring. And so we've established a program, a computer-based program called My Vector. Think of it as a match.com, matching those who want mentoring to older people who are willing to do the mentoring. And so, for example, I have 5 new mentors that I am mentoring through this program, and the numbers have gone up quite a bit that have enrolled in that program. So that's a pretty exciting one.
What questions do they ask you?
A lot of questions about personal stories. They asked me questions about communication skills. They asked me questions about the continuum of service between the active duty, our National Guard and Reserve. Of course, if you go into our National Guard and Reserve, you might then have a career as well in industry, still continuing to serve part-time in the military. I have an industry background, so people want to know what that was all about. So it's a lot of personal stories and understanding how different people have come up through the ranks.